Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte to over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information online at usairways.com. And Salter Mitchell, communicators helping Florida corporations and associations change public opinion to support their policy goals, public relations, legislative advocacy, and crisis communications that drives public opinion. Salter Mitchell online at saltermitchell.com. WFSU-FM Tallahassee, and other Florida public radio stations. From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida Senate continues its work on building a balanced state budget.
When people can't make tough decisions on one issue, it's going to impact somewhere else. This is a water balloon process. And if you choose not to cut in one area, it's going to come out of another area because we're not going to raise taxes to do so.
It looks like the Senate's education spending plan trumps both the governor and House proposals.
I think that what we can do is work together and they can meet the Senate proposal.
Some say a bill to cut Florida's property taxes will only lead to the state bullying local governments. And Governor Rick Scott zeroes in on the more than $15 billion being collected through special taxing districts. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. As lawmakers near the halfway mark in their 60-day legislative session, a Senate budget proposal is slowly taking shape. Committee chairs want to cut about $850 million from health care programs while boosting spending on public schools by more than $1 billion. James Call reports the Senate president said that for the most part, things are on track, even though some senators are openly questioning some of the priorities outlined in the proposed spending plan.
A Transportation Appropriations Subcommittee's work came to a halt Tuesday morning amid a flurry of questions about the group's spending proposal for roads, tourism, and economic development. The panel was unable to finish its review of the plan before the start of a Senate floor session, where Senate President Mike Haradopoulos handed the 15-member subcommittee the legislative equivalent of Saturday morning detention.
And so on Friday morning, the rest of the day will be free, but those who are on the Transportation Appropriations Committee will have the opportunity to go into that committee meeting at 7 in the morning on Friday if you still have things that you'd like to discuss in committee. If it's completed by Thursday, there will be no committee on Friday morning. So that will be available to those who'd like to have additional comments or have concerns.
Senate allocations for specific budget items like education and health care are coming out more than a week after the House's. And while committee chairs appear to want to push their proposal up the chain of command to the Budget Committee, individual senators want to dive into the details. Haradopoulos says senators are being deliberate and methodical in building a budget proposal. Lawmakers are scheduled to be in session until March 9th.
We want to make sure that every question is asked and answered. And so they'll have the time for not only tomorrow, but Thursday and Friday, at least in that committee, if necessary. The other committees seem to go just fine. But I would imagine, given the nature of the cuts we're going to have to make, I think it's always best to have as much discussion as possible. But we anticipate being ready to go. And again, it'd be great if we can get out here on time.
While the Senate is slowly releasing details of its spending plan, the House is expected to approve a $69.2 billion budget next week. The governor proposed a $66.4 billion spending plan. The Senate's budget work has stalled, partly due to a dispute on privatizing 27 South Florida prisons. Private companies would have to agree to operate the facilities at a savings of at least 7%. But Haradopoulos says he currently doesn't have the votes to pass the plan, and he was counting on the savings from privatization to balance the overall state budget.
And so until we have a firm understanding on that, we're going to have to take that money, as you asked earlier, from other parts of the budget. And so that means that we might have to take a little bit more into schools or health care or other benefits packages for state employees. You never know. So everything's on the table when people can't make tough decisions on one issue. It's going to impact somewhere else. This is a water balloon process. And if you choose not to cut in one area, it's going to come out of another area because we're not going to raise taxes to do so.
The budget is one of two bills that lawmakers have to pass this year. The other is redistricting. The drawing of new districts for the state Senate, House of Representatives, and the congressional delegation. Lawmakers draw new boundaries once every 10 years to reflect changes in population. The new maps need to be approved in time for an August primary election. Eric Doppler says lawmakers are on track to finish much earlier than the redistricting efforts of 1992 and 2002.
And those who've been here more longer than I have, if not the same amount of time, know that we're well on ahead of schedule. Talked to Senator Margolis, as we talked about last week, that they finished in July with the court's help. When I was here back in 2002, I think it was late May or early June, I forget when. We are going to pass that. All expectations will be on Thursday, get it into the Attorney General, then to the courts.
Once the Senate approves the maps, the Florida Supreme Court will review the ones for the state Senate and House to see if they comply with state laws regarding redistricting. In 1992 and 2002, the congressional maps were challenged in court, and that is expected to happen again. Lawmakers want to have the new maps approved by June 4th, the deadline for legislative candidates to file for the 2012 election. For Florida Public Radio, I'm James Call.
Still in the Senate, lawmakers began today crafting the education section of their budget proposal, which includes funding for K-12 in higher education. Lynn Hatter reports a preliminary view of the Senate's plan includes a little more money for K-12 and a little less for colleges and universities.
Senator David Simmons chairs the chamber's K-12 Appropriations Committee. He unveiled a budget proposal that gives an extra $1.2 billion to the state's public schools, topping both the governor and the House proposals. The Maitland Republican says the Senate's plan is $130 million more than what the House wants to spend on schools.
I applaud Speaker Dean Cannon for his commitment to education. I applaud the governor for his commitment to education. I think that what we can do is work together and they can meet the Senate proposal.
The extra billion-plus dollars will go to several things. It will provide funding for an extra 30,000 students who are expected to enter the state's public school system next year. It would also replace lost revenue from declining property taxes and fill in holes left by the loss of federal stimulus money. School transportation and instructional materials would also get a boost, and so does the fund that supports school reading programs. Under Simmons's budget proposal, DNF-rated schools would receive extra money to hold after-school reading courses for struggling students. State Senator Bill Monford, a Tallahassee Democrat, says such programs have been proven to be successful.
When we talk about the program, we tend to focus on the struggling schools, which we should, but we have struggling students in non-struggling schools as well. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, there's a provision in here to help all those, all the schools. In other words, sometimes I think we have a tendency to overlook the struggling students in a non-struggling school.
Meanwhile, higher education in the Senate would get an overall budget cut. The universities would take a one-time $400 million hit. Republican Senator Evelyn Lynn is the chamber's chief higher education budget writer.
And that has to do with the fact that they have a deal of money still left in their operating funds.
Lynn wants the schools to spend down money left over from last year. The legislature would put the money back in the 2013-2014 fiscal year. Under the Senate's proposal, community and state colleges can raise tuition by 3%, something that's at odds with the governor's call for no tuition increases. The chamber isn't proposing a rate hike at the state's universities, but those schools can still choose to raise rates by up to 15% by gaining approval from the Florida Board of Governors. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, lawmakers say a bill to cut property taxes lets the state bully local governments.
We should stop being proud of cutting somebody else's taxes. I am proud when we cut our own taxes. I am not proud when we cut somebody else's taxes.
We hear how Governor Rick Scott is targeting the state's special taxing districts.
Many of them need to periodically go back to the people and ask for referendum approval within the district to continue taking in dollars. It shouldn't just be automatic.
And a budget proposal that would give additional funds to the Department of Juvenile Justice gets called into question.
I'm not the best mathematician, but it's a big increase. I would urge us to make sure that this is the right place to put this kind of money. I would only put it there if there is ample evidence that these programs are working.
Lawmakers killed a proposal to amend the state constitution to cut property taxes. Regan McCarthy reports legislators say property tax reform is warranted, but worry about the impact the proposal could have on local governments.
Representative Jason Broder, a Republican from Sanford, says his bill was intended to cut down on inequities in the state's property taxes. It's a move Representative Charles Van Zandt, a Keystone Heights Republican, says is sorely needed. There is so much disparity between what is real property value. So when you have a value tax system and one person's property is next to another person's property that is the same identical structure, land, services, and all the rest of it, but the property tax is like three times its next door neighbor, that's wrong. That's just plain wrong. Van Zandt said he'd like for the tax to be totally replaced in the future by a consumptive use tax like sales tax. That's wrong for one governmental entity to be able to establish value and then say you're going to pay tax on this value or else. It is not wrong for a governmental entity to say this is the sales tax. In the meantime, Broder says his bill creates what's called a super homestead exemption. Broder's proposal would grant an exemption on property taxes for up to a certain percent of the value of a property, a percent lawmakers would be able to change each year. But those opposed to the bill say they're worried such an exemption would take too much money away from local governments. Republican Representative Fred Costello of Ormond Beach says he's not a fan of property taxes, but he says Broder's bill lets the state bully local governments.
We should stop being proud of cutting somebody else's taxes. I am proud when we cut our own taxes. I am not proud when we cut somebody else's taxes.
Costello says the state is shifting costs to local governments while decreasing their revenue sources.
We've shifted some Medicaid costs to the locals. We've shifted the county health department costs to the locals. We've tried to eliminate the business tax revenue, which did not go through finance and tax, but that was brought up. We have increased the corporate income tax exemption, which I wholeheartedly support for the job efforts. We're talking about increasing homestead exemptions. All these things are continual assaults on the ability of local governments to fund themselves.
Representative Mark Pafford, a Democrat from West Palm Beach, calls the bill fiscally irresponsible. He says the measure would inhibit the ability of local governments to provide services and says that would cut down on quality of life.
West Palm Beach has been ranked as the fourth most miserable city this week. Miami number one. So, you know, I mean, we can talk games and play games with taxes, but if people have no quality of life when they come here, to me that is probably the worst thing you can do for the economy.
Fort Lauderdale, also placed on Forbes magazine's list of the most miserable cities in the country, it ranked seventh. Lawmakers like Representative Scott Randolph, an Orlando Democrat, also brought up concerns about the provision that would let legislators change the exemption annually. Randolph says that could hurt communities' bonding abilities.
Any type of bond rating company is going to come in and give a huge negative outlook to Florida because they have no idea, no capability from year to year to know. And we don't put any provisions there protecting local governments from that.
And Randolph cautions the measure would not cut taxes. It would only shift them. The proposal died in the House Community and Military Affairs Committee with a tied vote. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. A Senate budget committee that oversees the spending for the courts and prisons rolled out an initial budget of making $140 million in cuts. But as Sasha Cordner reports, it was not the cuts that were a matter of concern to the panel. It was actually the added funding to the Department of Juvenile Justice.
About 2 months ago, Governor Rick Scott's budget recommendations for the prisons and the courts called for $160 million in cuts. Republican Senator Ellen Bogdanoff revealed Tuesday that the Senate's budget proposal is a bit less at $140 million in spending cuts.
We also have to fill the gaps in both the clerks and the courts because they were underfunded. So the key is that to fund them properly this year and find the money somewhere else. So we've actually done a pretty good job of not really cutting anybody, but the bulk of it's going to come out of DOC. And rightly so. I mean, their occupancy rate is much lower than it should be, thank God, because we actually do have less people going to prison. And if we could focus more on the front end, we will continue to reduce our prison population.
Bogdanoff is the new chair of the Budget Subcommittee on the Criminal and Civil Justice Appropriations, a position formerly held by Republican Senator Mike Fasano. There are questions surrounding Fasano's removal from his chairmanship had to do with his strong opposing views on privatizing state prisons in the South Florida region. But Senate President Mike Haradopoulos, a huge proponent of prison privatization, says Fasano's boot had to deal with the veteran GOP lawmaker not being able to make tough budget choices, not because of Fasano's prison privatization beliefs that there is no cost savings to the massive plan. Bogdanoff says her budget does not reflect the projected savings of the prison privatization effort, but that does not mean the massive effort to privatize South Florida prisons should be off the table. To her, all it just means
that we all need to keep our options open.
Prison privatization was not an issue at this meeting. However, a contentious part of the budget included giving additional funds to the Department of Juvenile Justice's redirection program. It's supposed to be a cheaper option for children facing misdemeanor charges who would normally be put on probation or put in low-risk residential facilities. But Republican Senator John Thrasher did not understand why lawmakers had allocated $10 million for the program.
That's a big number.
That's a big number.
Can we get some more specifics on that and how it will work and what are going to be the metrics for measuring and those kind of things?
I think the key is, Senator Thrasher, what you would be asking is, what is the success of the program? But it's my understanding in speaking to Chairman Alexander in the president's office that they have some statistics that show success. But obviously, this is a huge item, probably one of the largest in the budget, which I think deserves probably more information in this committee before we move forward.
Republican Senator Mike Bennett questioned whether it was relevant to fund programs that already send kids away rather than put the money in prevention programs like the Boys and Girls Club.
When I look at the Boys and Girls Club have done down there for gang prevention and keeping the kids off the street, a lot of these kids don't want to get in trouble, but they get so much pressure from their peers. But if we can come up with other programs that allow them to have some attention after school, someplace else to go to, maybe we don't have to spend so much money on redirection.
Senator Thrasher says he still has a problem that the program would be receiving almost double what it has now. He asked Bogdanoff if the panel could receive the proper figures before proceeding with this aspect of the budget.
I'm not the best mathematician, but it's a big increase. I would urge us to make sure that this is the right place to put this kind of money. I would only put it there if there is ample evidence that these programs are working.
After hearing the concerns of most of the members on the panel, Bogdanoff agreed to hold off on allocating the numbers before having all the facts.
I think that there's probably a sense in this particular committee that we would rather go with prevention and redirect those dollars to prevention before the kids get in the system if it's not more effective than it is, and that the providers are actually out there, because last we know, they were not.
Bogdanoff made those comments to a Department of Juvenile Justice representative who promised that he would get the necessary data to the budget panel before members made their decision of where to place the $10 million in funds. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
In other news around the state, Republican Representative Keith Perry of Gainesville says he's proposing an amendment to current legislation, House Bill 1399, that will direct the Florida Department of Transportation to erect signs on I-75 and U.S. 441. The proposed amendment is in direct response to the fatal and tragic accidents that occurred a little over a week ago on I-75 that killed 11 people. Perry said at a press conference in Gainesville this afternoon that the Highway Patrol will remain key in ensuring safety on the roadway, but new technology is critical to getting the information out to motorists more quickly.
So when we look at technology, look at what airports are using to determine fog that rolls in or visibility. That's what airports deal with on a daily basis. So if we can use some of their technology, emerging technologies, and get people out of the equation as much as possible.
The proposed transportation legislation could lead to new advanced signs on Interstate 75 on either end of Paynes Prairie. Perry says current signage use can't be changed fast enough when conditions change quickly. Meanwhile, law enforcement is continuing its investigation into the deadly pileups. A group called the Florida Association of Insurance Reform, or FAIR, along with State Senator Mike Fasano, are backing a class action lawsuit against Florida's largest property insurer. The lawsuit alleges that Citizens Property Insurance is using a backdoor method of raising property values to increase premiums after lawmakers rejected a plan last year that would have allowed the carrier to raise rates by about 2,000%.
Miss Laura was a perfect example that came to see us in our office. She was wondering why her premium, her insurance premium, rose so high. And we soon found out that her home that is valued by the property appraiser of about $50,000 is being appraised by Citizens at $129,000, and that's the amount of insurance she has to get on her home.
The lawsuit against Citizens claims the company is using a software program that artificially inflates the replacement value of a home in order to charge homeowners higher insurance rates. A spokeswoman for Citizens says it has no reason to overinsure customers. Now here's Ronald J. Eben with a look at some of the action around the Capitol tomorrow.
The House Economic Affairs Committee meets from 8 till 10 Wednesday morning. Among the bills to be considered is a measure that will provide homestead exemptions for the surviving spouses of military veterans or first responders. Also to be considered a bill that would double the tangible personal property tax exemption. The House State Affairs Committee will consider a voter identification bill, and then the full House meets at 10:45. The Senate meets between 9 and 10 Wednesday morning, to be followed by the annual reunion session and a luncheon for the returning members of the Senate. At 2:30 Wednesday afternoon, the Subcommittee on Ethics and Elections will meet. And that's the day book for Wednesday, February 8th.
Finally, Florida Governor Rick Scott has his Government Efficiency Acts poised above Florida's special taxing districts. These often tiny districts combine to collect more than $15 billion tax dollars each year. And as Jessica Palumbo from member station WJCT in Jacksonville reports, Scott wants a clear picture of where all that money goes.
Bruce Hires runs the Mosquito Control District on North Florida's Amelia Island.
You can call, and kind of like fire and rescue or police, we come take care of your problem within an hour, usually.
His is just one of more than 1,600 special taxing districts in Florida. They tax you in order to provide a single function. You may recall the list of fees on your property tax bill. And altogether, they collect about $15.5 billion each year. That revenue number has the attention of Governor Scott. It prompted him last month to order his budget office to thoroughly review every special district in the state. This comes after he ordered similar reviews of water management and hospital districts last year, and those led to budget cuts and dozens of jobs lost. West Palm Beach lawyer Terry Lewis has been general counsel to the Florida Association of Special Districts for the past 30 years. He says the governor's review is not necessary because the districts already operate transparently.
From the standpoint of financial reporting, operating, taxing, and spending, you would not find that they go about that any differently than a city or a county.
Most special district boards are elected by the residents of the district, and districts are usually created when residents see the need for something their city or county is unable to provide, whether that's drainage or fire control or a library. With so many of them, some mistakes are bound to be made. But Lewis says in 30 years, he's received only about 5 complaints of mismanagement. State Representative Mike Weinstein of Jacksonville says he expects many districts will be shown to be operating within the law.
But there'll be a percentage, I'm confident, that have been allowed to go astray a little bit, get a little bit more informal, and they're doing it with less and less concern because nobody's looking out. Nobody's overseeing it. Nobody's watching out.
Not exactly, Lewis says. Florida law says several agencies have jurisdiction over special districts. Those include the Division of Bond Finance, the Auditor General, the State Ethics Commission, and the Election Commission. But Representative Weinstein remains convinced that at least some districts have outlived their original purpose.
Many of them need to periodically go back to the people and ask for referendum approval within the district to continue taking in dollars. It shouldn't just be automatic year in, year out, decade after decade.
But Lewis says he worries that if a district's future is always a question mark, then no one will want to lend it money and its credit score will go way down. Governor Scott's order calls for recommendations for improving districts' efficiency and fiscal accountability, but Association of Special Districts President Cleet Saunier says they're already so efficient they can't afford to advertise the good they do.
Individually, our member districts do not have the funding to support a public relations component that would inform their state legislators how efficiently they provide those services to their constituents.
For what he thinks will be good PR, Saunier says, he welcomes the review. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are James Call, Sasha Kordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tremel Gomes, inviting you to join us each weeknight for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte to over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information online at usairways.com. And Salter Mitchell, communicators helping Florida corporations and associations change public opinion to support their policy goals, public relations, legislative advocacy, and crisis communications that drives public opinion. Salter Mitchell online at saltermitchell.com. WFSU-FM Tallahassee and other Florida public radio stations. This is the Florida Public Radio Network.